to believe or not to believe? That is the question. Or perhaps more accurately, regarding attitudes towards organized religion, does one believe? Is one uncertain or ambivalent? Or does one reject it entirely? Last Saturday, the National Post published a recent survey of over 3,000 Canadians. It showed that even as our affiliation with organized religion continues to decline, there are still those of us who believe. For many of us, it's in our own deeply personal way. Some interesting statistics. 70% of Canadians are either ambivalent about organized religion or reject it altogether, while 30% embrace religion. Now, in British Columbia, only 24% embrace religion, the lowest in Canada, except tied with Quebec. Related to age, the 55-plus demographic, which is most of us, 35% of us are inclined to embrace religion. Interestingly, though, the younger group, the 18 to 34s, are more likely to embrace religion than the 35s to 44s. That's interesting. While Canadians may not be embracing religion, they are not abandoning God. And I found this a little astonishing. 94% believe in heaven. 90% believe in angels. And 89% believe in miracles. I wonder who they think that's all about. One of the pollsters wrote, "We want to embrace something that's bigger than ourselves, but may not be as comfortable as diving in with 2 feet." Immigrant statistics are quite interesting. So if we look at immigration from 2001 to 2011, the Roman Catholic Church has had the biggest boom, with 478,000 new members. Muslims are next with 388,000. Anglicans break in at 23,000. In all age groups, Canadian immigrants attended religious service, read religious texts, pray privately, and say grace more frequently than nationals. Public perception of religious groups showed that 49% think positively about the Roman Catholic Church, 40% think positively about Protestants, 30% were positive about evangelical Christians, and sadly, only 15% felt positively about Muslims, reporting their belief that Islam encourages violence. We could argue about what these results reveal. However, I'm wondering about our own journeys through unbelief, disbelief, and belief. I had to look up the difference between disbelief and unbelief. Unbelief weighs in heavily around belief in nothing at all. So just the opposite of faith. Disbelief is where Thomas was. It's about doubt and about mistrust. Many of us have found ourselves in places of unbelief or disbelief at times, especially during times of fear, illness, uncertainty, loneliness, loss, or grief. We are not alone. Some of the holiest, most devout people have moved through their unbelief. Our so-called Doubting Thomas founded churches, established churches in India. That church called Mar Thoma exists today. St. John of the Cross grew up in an impoverished family in Avila, Spain in the 1500s. He was imprisoned for his religious reforms. It was out of his poverty and suffering that John learned to search for beauty and happiness not in the world, but in God. He was the one who wrote the poem, The Dark Night of the Soul, while imprisoned. The dark night of the soul is when we, like St. John of the Cross and Thomas, learn how to embrace the mystery, this uneasy mystery of Easter and life. It is the experience when God comes to us whenever, wherever we may be, to meet us where we are, even if out on the far edge of faith that has forgotten how to believe. Answers to our most profound and desperate questions about life and faith come to us not through our own efforts, but because God seeks us, stepping through the walls that hardship and skepticism build around us. But how do we know that it is God who has come? Will we recognize Jesus' presence in those moments when life's most brutal violence is honestly acknowledged? Or when peace is offered? Or when we realize that God did not abandon us on Easter Sunday? When we realize that we are not lost or alone, but in fact have always been found? What follows is one of the greatest conversion stories ever told, at least one of my favorite. The one about our beloved C.S. Lewis. Clive Staples Lewis was raised in a church-going family in the Church of Ireland. He became an atheist at the age of 15, though he later paradoxically described his young self as being very angry with God for not existing. His separation from Christianity began when he started to view his religion as a chore and as a duty. Lewis's strongest argument for atheism was, had God designed the world, it would not be a world so frail and faulty as we see. I imagine many of us have had these thoughts from time to time. Lewis held a strong interest in fantasy and mythology, especially the works of George MacDonald, who was a Scottish author, poet, and Christian minister. MacDonald was a pioneering figure in the field of fantasy literature. His position as a Christian fantasy writer was very influential on Lewis and was what was turned him from atheism. This can be seen particularly well through the following passage from Lewis's The Great Divorce, when the semi-autobiographical main character meets MacDonald in heaven. I tried, trembling, to tell this man all that his writings had done for me. Here begins the new life. I started to confess how long that life had been delayed, merely in the region of imagination. How slowly and reluctantly I had come to admit that his Christendom had more than an accidental connection with it. How hard I tried not to see that the true name of the quality which first met me in his books is holiness. Influenced by arguments with his Oxford colleague and friend J.R.R. Tolkien, and by Roman Catholic convert G.K. Chesterton, he slowly rediscovered Christianity. He fought greatly up to the moment of his conversion, noting, "I came into Christianity kicking and screaming." He described this last struggle in his book, Surprised by Joy. You must picture me alone in that room in Magdalen College at Oxford, night after night, feeling, whenever my mind lifted even for a second from my work, the steady, unrelenting approach of him whom I so earnestly desired not to meet. That which I greatly feared had at last come upon me. In the Trinity term of 1929, I gave in and admitted that God was God and knelt and prayed. Perhaps that night the most dejected and reluctant convert in all of England. After his conversion to first theism, Lewis converted to Christianity 2 years later. Following a long discussion and late night walk with his close friend Tolkien, Lewis records making a specific commitment to the Christian belief while walking with his brother on the way to the zoo. He became a member of the Church of England. A committed Anglican, Lewis upheld a largely orthodox Anglican theology, though in his apologetic writings he made an effort to avoid espousing any one denomination. Lewis considered himself an entirely orthodox Anglican to the end of his life, reflecting that he had initially attended church only to receive communion and had been repelled by the hymns and the poor quality of the sermons. I hope that's not true for you. However, he later came to consider himself honored by worshiping with men of faith who came in shabby clothes and work boots and knew all the words to all of the hymns. Like Lewis's conversion or transformation, the gospel for this morning is an interwoven journey through unbelieving, receding through some sort of encounter, and followed by believing. The gospel reading is not so much about unbelief, disbelief, or doubt, as it is often about Jesus' offering of himself over and over and over again to those who long to see him. It is a parable of grace and transformation. In times when belief seems beyond our reach, we can be reassured in the words of Carl Jung, "Bidden or not bidden, God is present."